Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, Ola, it's Miles. Thank you guys for listening to the Men's Room Daily Podcast.
Have you heard our newest podcast? It's called The Greatest Story Never Told.
Download it today on radio.com. Be sure to subscribe. New episodes are uploaded every Tuesday at noon.
The shenanigans continue. This is the Men's Room with Miles and Thrill. 99.9 KISW.
As you know, the old mask there is mandatory indoors in Washington State. And as far as outdoor goes, yeah, you should wear it there, too. If you can get within 6 feet of somebody and stay away, then you're okay outdoors. But for the most part, you need that mask on. And might as well look stylish with the KISW face mask. Portion of each mask goes to help our friends at the Washington State Nurses Association. All the details on the mask at KISW.com. And oh, by the way, we are still going to try to get Warren Williamson on the program. We got an email yesterday from a guy named Ray. They're doing a memorial torch run from Eugene, Oregon, all the way to Arlington National Cemetery. It's going to take 22 days, and they were seeing if we could donate some masks. So we're going to try to get to work on that, find out how many they need, and hopefully we'll get a hold of Warren here before the end of the show. In the meantime, our question, what is the most dangerous part of your hobby, and did you ever find out personally? 206-421-ROCK.
Here's a fine example of someone who rides horses. Says when I was 18, I got thrown off my horse, who's the equivalent of 5'9" tall, and I landed on one of the wood fence posts that we use for jumps. Exploded two discs and fractured three vertebrae, missing my spinal cord by 1/16". It took 4 different surgeries and 14 months of physical therapy for me to be able to walk again without any pain. I'm 26 now, and I can still feel my spine grind together with every step. Doesn't hurt, though, and they add, F horses, they're a-holes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I feel like, in general, any hobby, if something goes bad, will be bad.
It's going to be real bad. I collect stamps. I got a paper cut on my tongue licking one.
Yeah.
Hello, Austin. Welcome to the men's room.
Hey, how's it going?
Hola.
Hola. So, I drift fish a lot, and I basically, I drift fish a lot in the rivers, like Puyallup and Suquamish and all that stuff. And so basically, like, you'll use a weight to let it drift along the bottom. It'll be a cannonball weight, rounded. And so when it hits, it'll floss across the fish's mouth, and then you reel them in. But sometimes it'll get snagged on a log or anything underneath the river. You can't really see. They're so cloudy out here. So when you go to pull that and free it, it'll basically snap back. And if you got a heavy enough weight on there, it comes back like a cannonball. It literally is a cannonball weight. So it looks like a little musket ball coming right at your face. And I've almost broken my nose with that one time, enough to where I don't really cry a lot as an adult, but I had tears coming down my face when it happened.
I mean, it just smacked you right in the face when you yanked it.
Yeah, because when you're pulling, it's coming towards you, and you're pulling, and so when it releases, it comes directly at you. And then I've actually heard of a guy that had a pencil lead go into his eyeball, and he lost use of his eye from that.
What is the advantage to being on the bottom there? Are the fish bigger? I mean, I'm assuming you're going for salmon and trout, or what are you going for?
Salmon. So basically, like, there's different ways you can do it. You can bobber float it and stuff, but if it's on the bottom, basically it floats. You have a little float corky on it with a leader coming out. So this is drifting on the bottom, and if you just put something on a hook in the water, it's just going to sit on top. So this brings it down to about halfway while the float brings it halfway up.
I see.
So it's right about where the fish is. So they don't even go for it like it would be food. They just kind of are swimming along, and all of a sudden this thing catches their mouth.
By saying float, you're saying you're basically just rolling this leader down the river.
Yeah, exactly. And okay, then this thing, the little float at the by the hook is basically just kind of hovering right around where the fish will be, and they just happen to pass right by.
Let me ask you this. This is a ridiculous question, but say you're trolling this thing along the bottom. I don't know, there's a beaver down there or something. Like, if the beaver grabbed that little can of bones, little hands, and kind of yanked it back and let go, would that thing come flying out of the water at you?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not quite like that.
How about bears? I mean, I know you haven't experienced one yet, but they tend to hang out. They sure do love the taste of salmon.
If I saw a bear underneath the river that popped his head up, that's something I don't think I'd ever see.
Okay.
But I will say that if you're trolling with, and I've trolled with sardines, and I've had a seal basically grab it and pull it, and you think you got something.
Okay. All right. Very good. Yeah. Fishing, dangerous. It can be. I mean, like you can be out in the middle of a storm. There's all kinds of stories about guys who are, you know, boating in the Gulf of Mexico or whatever, get involved in a bad storm, never make it back.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Fishing in general, especially if you're
going
to go out.
But you know, if you're going way out.
Or whatever you're doing.
But anytime you're going to be on a boat way out.
All right, but look,
I mean, I went on a cruise. I thought about, I mean, like, I hated the movie Titanic, but for whatever reason, it ran through my head every night.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is high as the boat. I mean, you look at the boat where they saw that great white shark in Ocean City, and the shark was as long as the boat.
Yeah.
And that's the, I need a bigger boat. Yeah, you do. If I saw that thing, we would be leaving. We would be leaving immediately.
Oh, that's my thought, yeah.
Because what if this great white shark rammed the side of this boat, put a hole in it, and all of a sudden, you know what I mean?
And how bad I would feel pushing you into its mouth while I swim to shore. I would live with that guilt, man.
Right.
That'd be hard on me, Miles. Be like, yeah, I pushed his ass directly, and it was me or him. Mm-hmm. Miles was eating, but I made it back. He sacrificed for me unknowingly.
What is the most dangerous part of your hobby, and did you ever find out personally? 206-421-RON.
Hello, David. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola.
Hola.
Hey, so my hobby is rodeo. You know, kind of similar to that horse story, but this was on a bull. So this was my very first ride ever. I'm 19 years old, you know, trying to do something new. And I get on the bull, you know, get situated. Everybody's helping me out. And let it go. So I'm going out, and I fling over the head of this bull, and my hand gets stuck in the rope, so I don't actually fall off.
Oh!
So I'm getting flung around, and the horn of the bull actually goes underneath. I was wearing a helmet, a hockey helmet. The horn goes underneath the helmet and starts, you know, rubbing my neck and cutting my neck. So it looks like there's a decent amount of blood. I eventually fall off, but to top it, the bull then spins, and his foot completely crushes the face mask against my face.
Ooh!
So, at the end of it, all they see is all this blood, you know, from my neck being kind of cut, and this face mask. They think it's horrible. I think it's horrible.
Yeah, but, I bet you do.
Turns out okay, but they had to use a screw gun to get the face mask off of my face because it wouldn't just pop off like it was supposed to.
See, if that's me, I'm not doing that again, but I'm guessing you got back on another bull. How long did you wait before you got on a bull?
Actually, about 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Really? So is it adrenaline? I mean, what is it? You're just like, to hell with it. That's just the danger that comes with this. I'm doing it again?
Exactly. It was, you know, there's no other adrenaline rush like it, you know, been skydiving.
Yeah, sitting on an animal that wants you off. I can imagine that, but
isn't that one of the highest sports for concussion rates?
I believe so.
It's got to be.
Yeah, it's bull ride.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be. So before you get on a bull, right, like you teach your kids to drive the car before you let them drive the car on your own. So what is the process you go through to train to sit on an animal that's going to buck wildly and seriously wants you off of it?
Oh, it's definitely, I mean, what I was taught was you got to get your head right. You got to be focused. You got to be, you know, whether that's listening to a song before you ride and making sure all your gear is proper, making sure everything's put in place. But definitely just, you know, getting your head right so you're focused on what you're doing.
When you were a little kid, did you do mutton busting?
No, so I had no experience with rodeo or anything until I met some friends when I got older, and they said, do you want to try? And I said, yeah.
But, I mean, how long from the point that you say, yeah, I want to get on a bull until you actually sit on a bull?
I mean, that was, you know, a couple days. You know, they said, hey, there's a rodeo this weekend. Do you want to do this? And I said, yeah. And then
okay, so was this
came and I did it.
Is this the only time you ever tried?
No. So I did it. My last ride was about 2 years ago because I actually dislocated my hip. But, you know, I did it for about 7 years.
What was the longest ride?
I covered. I got 8 seconds.
Did you?
Okay. All right. All right. Yeah. What's the best way you could describe what it is like to be on top of that animal the moment it does all the stuff we see it do?
Oh, it's, you know, for the first, you know, 20 or so rides that you do it, you honestly, you don't know what you're doing. You're just trying to hold on. You don't have any practice. It's, but once you get to know what you're doing, it's all muscle memory, you know, just like any other sport.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Are you required to wear Wrangler jeans or is that just happenstance?
That's just happenstance.
Okay.
Okay.
And does bull riding, does that get you some action?
Oh, yes.
It does.
We call them buckle bunnies.
Buckle bunnies.
All right.
I think I understand.
Well, I mean, look, if you can ride that bull, I'm just assuming. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
I have been to bull riding twice.
All right.
And once was at like a smaller arena. Anyhow, so we went to a bar like near the place as we were there early. And he's not lying. There was a certain set of like, wait a minute, who are those girls? And I was like, oh, they're all here with the riders. Like, that makes more sense.
What is the most dangerous part of your hobby? And did you ever find out personally? 206-421-RUN.
I want you to think about what you said, Ted. Like, oh, that makes more sense. Put that to the translation filter. This little town is full of ugly people, and I don't understand who those people must be. That's basically, well, oh, that makes sense.
It's so pretty. It just, right, they were attractive. It stuck out for the bar we were in.
I understand.
I knew the owner, and I was just going to like, what's the deal?
Yeah, right?
This isn't your normal, right. Like, 3 p.m. on a Saturday.
I know that cameraman's always going to do his job, but I mean, like, even when you watch rodeo on TV, PBR or whatever, when they cut the break, it's always like two hot girls in a cowboy hat,
yes,
like, waving at the camera, like, ah!
It's the NFL rule.
We're back in El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, look, Mike and I went last year, man. It when you see it in person, it is so exciting. The PBR, like, I haven't been to a total rodeo, but also, the crazy thing is, it's like, you're mostly just listening to, like rap jams and stuff. Because, like, the guy comes out, he picks his music, and then right. You hope he's on there for 8 seconds. Then a lot of it's kind of standing around, drinking a beer, being like, all right, let's party.
All right, yeah. Let me ask
and
you
And it's
this,
real.
Man.
I mean,
it's
like,
real.
It's
and
real.
We were up on, like, the fence line, right? I think it was called a dirt suite.
You had a dirt suite?
Yes. But I won't lie. When that bull, the one time, because they kind of run around, came sure. charging at, like, I stepped back. I know
I
it was fully
too.
Safe, but it was like,
you
oh.
don't think the dirt suite was well protected?
I'm saying, I've never seen one bust out of an arena, but when you're that close to it, like, you're moving.
Let me ask you this. So, my kids will get excited to go to the zoo, and they kind of go, you know what, man, that is a good idea. It's a fine trip. And the smell hits me as soon as I get there, and I'm like, right. I keep forgetting that I really hate this part, particularly you gorillas. I don't know what you eat, but it ain't good. But when you walk into a rodeo, I'm just thinking of all the animals that are there, all the sweat, all the adrenaline, and all the dude. Like, what does that smell like when you walk into an arena?
Yeah, I think a rodeo is different. The PBR, it's like, it still smells like a normal sporting event.
Okay.
Because there's some, like, popcorn and everything. Like,
ah, very important.
But, yeah, if I was at a rodeo, like, say, at an outdoor venue.
Like Calgary?
Yeah, I think that's a different smell. Because then you got the horses and everything. This is just bulls.
Just bulls. Bulls are good smelling folk.
What's the most dangerous part of your hobby? And did you ever find out personally? 206-421-ROCK.
Hello, Jake. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola.
Hola.
So, with my hobby is I love to build guns, take them out shooting, go hunting, things like that.
If you're going to build a gun, I would hope you'd do the rest of that stuff.
So I've been around guns my whole life. I think I got my first rifle when I was 9 years old. It was a gift from my grandfather. So I've had all the discipline, all the training. I was in the Army for 4 years. So I've always been around gun safety. This actually happened 2 weeks ago. I went down to Olympia to the Triangle Pit, and I took my newly built a 308 AR, and this guy walks over to me, wants to know if he can take a couple rounds through it and wants to shoot it down range and things like that. And I was like, sure, why not? So I go down, I set up a new target for him. Everybody else had stopped shooting. We were getting ready to start shooting again. And as soon as I go down the range, there's this guy who just starts letting rounds off down range.
Jesus.
And so we're all just at him, and one dude actually runs straight at him and just tackles him.
What do you think was going on with this guy?
I honestly have no idea. I think it was just he had these new earmuffs, and I honestly don't know. With those earmuffs, they can be hard to hear sometimes, but you gotta pay attention to your surroundings. I don't think he was paying a lick of attention.
I would guess he's not, or he hated you. I mean, that's the alternative. He wanted you dead, or he was not paying attention.
Yeah.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
I knew the guy, so there's a chance he wanted to kill me. Damn.
I mean, that's scary. Somebody firing during a ceasefire at a range.
It's, even if it's not a ceasefire, it's scary. I remember getting shot at in Baltimore. We knew there's no chance guys are going to hit us, but me and my buddy Leon, we left a bar. It's 2 a.m. This area called Fells Point. At the time, to get from Fells Point to where we live, you just walk through the hood. There's no way around it. Well, guess there's a way around it. It'd be like an 8-mile walk, right? So we're cutting through there, and my buddy, he puts his hand on my chest. He goes, "Hang on a minute, man." I'm like, "What?" And he kind of points about 2 blocks away at a stop sign. There's a brother standing there. And he's like, "I think he's going to shoot." And as he's saying, it's like, "Man, I think he's going to shoot." And it's this weird thing. I don't think he got anywhere close. Doesn't matter. Either way, we take off running. But we're like running through all these buildings and the projects. And we're kind of laughing. You know what I mean? It's that weird, like, nervous laugh. And then you hear another. Man's getting out of there without getting shot. Did not know the guy. We weren't there to be no good. I don't know what it was about, but it's just Baltimore being Baltimore.
It's those brick apartments with the laundry.
You know exactly.
I did not get shot at.
Right.
I thought I was going to die.
And I was just like, oh, my God. And, you know, but
don't walk home for bowhaggers.
You know what, man? That
the old one.
That is precisely
the old one.
Precisely the location. Exactly. I cannot explain what this little hood is like. It is not very big, but it is. It is so remarkably dangerous. And it's only like 8 blocks, right? But I mean,
it doesn't matter. 1 block is the difference.
It is effed up.
In Baltimore, 1 block can make a huge difference.
Yeah, but I'm like, why is he even shooting at us?
And it's kind of funny. Like, he just looked at him and was like, oh, he's going to shoot at us.
Instantly. I didn't even see the guy. But Leon, he stopped me. He's like, hey, man, I'm telling you, I think. Jesus Christ!
What's the most dangerous part of your hobby? You're just going to a show, probably. And did you ever find out personally? 206-421-ROCK.
Walking home, leaving the bar.
Mm-hmm. That's a hobby.
Don't you dare do that.
Yeah, or high school parties. Like, we never got shot at, but I was definitely at parties where shots rang
out. Right. That's how the party ended.
Yeah.
That's the East Coast standard. Like, how long are you going to party? Well, until somebody shoots somebody. Mm-hmm.
Right, and then I never knew anybody that got shot at one of these parties, but it was always the same thing. Like, the next Monday at school, it was like, they were just blanks, they're shooting them in the air, everything's fine.
Oh, that, like, that comforted where we everyone.
Live. Yeah.
I know. I'm just telling you.
They were not firing.
That's what it was every time.
That's someone covering to make sure they don't go to jail if the cops ask you what the hell happened. Hello, Todd. Welcome to the men's room.
Hello.
Hola.
Today's a great day. So my hobby is running, jogging. I love to do that.
That makes no sense. I just don't. I know people do it. I get it. And I'm happy that people are being healthy. But, like, I can't. My hobby is stopping. Like, as soon as I start running, the next thing I think is, man, I can't wait till I stop running.
Sit down.
And I do my hobby very well.
Well, I'm not running. I love to do this thing. So I'm training for races, for whatever, you know, and I'm out there running. And it doesn't matter what time of the year it is. So it's raining. Somebody goes through a mud puddle. I get hosed. Okay, that's expected. I'm running down during the summer. Somebody throws a Gatorade bottle at me, hits me right in the leg.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not. I mean, the guy leans out the window. I'm like, oh, hey. I'm like, he's waving. And all of a sudden, I see this water. And he throws it right at my junk. And I just moved right out of the way just in time. It hit me in the top left thigh, right next to my business. And man, I tell you what, I went down and I grabbed the rock and I ran for another 3 miles trying to find those dudes.
Randomly.
You know, I mean, from the pretentious standpoint, people do hate runners. I think it's a level below bicyclists, but I definitely think that.
But I wouldn't think I'm going to hit them with a bottle of a jug.
I mean, running with traffic is obviously dangerous. You know, like most people who run know to run against traffic. So if you're going to run, that way you can at least jump out of the way if somebody swerves. If they're coming up behind you and they swerve off the road, you can't see them.
You can't see them.
So,
I graduate in 87. I get into some trouble, and I'm like, I got to get out of this environment. So I go, what's a better place to go and chill out than Alaska? So I know my cousin lives up in Alaska. I go, hey, can I come up there for a couple years to get away from my stuff? Sure, come on up. So I go up there, and I still love running. I'm 20 years old, but 30 years ago from this month, actually, and there's a mountain outside of Anchorage called Flat Top.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've been up there with Miles, and I hated every second of it.
We got caught up in a cloud, man, of that scramble on the top, and we couldn't see, and we thought we were going to die.
So I go up there, I got my running shoes, my cutoffs, I put a hacky sack in my back pocket, and I got my smoking device in my left pocket. So what a cool thing. We'll go up there to Flat Top, we'll do some hacky sack. It's 1990, I got my freaking long hair in the back, you know. And so we do our business, I'm on the way down, I'm like, hey, I want to run this trail. Well, started running on this trail, went off the trail a little bit, and the mountain started getting steeper and steeper and steeper, and I lost my footing. And I went head over heel down almost that entire side of that mountain.
It's a quicker way down to the parking lot by that mega church.
I mean, that is one way to get down.
I will say this. Whoever went up there and spray painted rocks just in case you couldn't see and you were caught up in that stuff. If they hadn't spray painted those rocks, we couldn't have got off there.
And I would have killed you.
Yeah, I know. You're just like, where the clown? What the hell's going on over here?
A good chest pass. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Two hands. Thumbs out.
Yeah. What's the most dangerous part of your hobby? And did you ever find out personally? We'll take a quick break. Come back with more of your calls next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Men's Room is in progress. 99.9 KISW and KISW HD1 Seattle.
Oh, by the way, we're gonna try to get a hold of Warren Williamson here. We told him we would call him around 4 o'clock or so. He is the president of Tribute to Fallen Soldiers, and they are doing a memorial torch run. We got a nice email from one of the guys participating, Ray, who's going to photograph and document the whole thing, and they were curious if they could support the KISW face mask. Available now at KISW.com. Mm-hmm. But as you know, a portion of each mask sold goes to the Washington State Nurses Association because we just can't give them away. We're going to try to figure out a way to see how many masks we need and see if we can't get that done. So we're going to try to get Warren on the phone here coming up in just a few minutes. In the meantime, our question, what is the most dangerous part of your hobby and did you ever find out? Personally, as far as lightning goes, and you mentioned earlier.
Is this personal to you?
That seems like a weird hobby.
It is weird, isn't
lightning?
It? Well, people are storm chasers and what do?
They go out. Good point.
And they go right into
they
the
are insane.
Of as bad as things could possibly be. Granted, they have four rubber tires in the road, but that does not stop 120-130 miles an hour.
Right. And, I appreciate their footage. I do appreciate their footage, but that's ridiculous.
But as far as the top 10 activities that you can do with the highest lightning risk, coming in at just number 11 and barely missing the top 10 list, that would be outdoor soccer.
Oh, God.
Specifically outdoor soccer.
Specifically 7v7 old guy pub league.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
In the Pacific Northwest.
Classic division.
And you know which position typically gets hit?
Goalie.
Probably the keeper.
That would be the keeper.
Yeah. Well, you're surrounded by a metal
frame. Standing underneath a lightning rod. That is exactly right. Number 10 is construction workers.
Sure.
Roofers specifically come in at number 9. They
adds
get hit.
Up.
Makes sense, right? Walking to and from your home, believe it or not.
Jesus, man.
Yeah, there's another chance, 4%. Social gatherings outdoors, you're at a picnic, good chance you might get zapped. If you're on a boat, you've got a 4% chance. If you're on a solo bike, motorcycle, ATV, 5%. If you're farming or ranching on top of a piece of equipment, out in the middle of a field with a big metal lightning rod, 5%.
That's why I don't farm.
Camping at 5%, being at the beach, 6%. And the number one thing, hobby that you can do,
It's got to be golf. It's
got to be golf.
Exactly.
You're holding the lightning rod in your hand.
Fishing. You've got a taller lightning rod.
Damn it. Damn it.
Was golf not on there at all?
No, not even close.
And just you got soccer. Struck by lightning.
Just soccer. Comes in at number 11.
This person has a good comment, and I respect this. It says, I make hot sauces. The most dangerous part is trying fresh peppers. I had a Carolina Reaper last night. Now, years ago when I was cooking, I remember we had a catering event. The one thing I can't remember the peppers that we had, but the idea was, man, put on gloves if you're going to cut these peppers. I was in charge, so naturally I did not wear gloves, and I ended up being the guy cutting the peppers. I don't give it another thought. We're in a hurry. This party is showing up for whatever this event is we're doing. I got to run to the bathroom, take a leak. No big deal. I'm in. I'm out. Wash my hands. Come back about 30 seconds later, man. I'm back at the cutting board, and you don't want to bring it up to people around you, but, like, there's something wrong, and I can't quite tell what it is, but there's something wrong with my penis. And this is mostly why I'm not going to bring this up to coworkers. And the sensation keeps getting worse, and then I realize I have transferred some of the oil off of the peppers onto my junk when I went to the bathroom, and this thing is now burning like a hot coal going through snow. Then I had no problem bringing it up to everyone. I'm like, oh, my God. I went to the bathroom. They all understood. I'm dumping the buckets of ice, big spoonfuls of ice into my pants. That doesn't really work. I had to go get milk. This is stupid. But I went into the walk-in, forbade anyone from walking in, and I had a little ramekin full of milk with my penis in it until the pain went away. I'm not proud. It wasn't a great moment. And, yes, everyone knew exactly what I was doing. And then we poured the milk and cereal. That is a lie. But I did have to put my penis in milk until the pain went away.
What is the most dangerous part of your hobby? And did you ever find out personally? 206-421-ROD.
I put mine in milk, too.
And there was nothing wrong.
No. In fact, there was no pain.
Just pleasure.
Yogurt's better. Hello, Jamie. Welcome to the men's room. Hello, Jamie.
Jamie.
Goodbye, Jamie. Hello, Marcelo. Welcome to the men's room.
Hey.
Hola.
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 So what's the most dangerous part of your hobby?
I ride motocross. Now I'm kind of retiring at 48 years old. I've never been a pro, just amateur riding. Big jump, the biggest triple jump that I've jumped was 100 feet.
Dang,
up here in Washougal. 100 feet distance from like ramp to landing. It's just,
what's that like? Were you on a 250?
Yeah, 250.
Okay. Yes, I was going to think, what in the hell could prepare you propel you through the air that far?
Yeah. It's good. But the bikes are well designed. The suspension absorbs the impact of the landing. It takes a little bit of good warm up, and you have to be decisive. Just get on the throttle and jump. You can't think twice.
Is there a back ramp on it, or is it just a flat surface?
Say that again?
I said, is there a back ramp from the launch ramp? Do you have a landing ramp, or are you just landing on a flat surface with that jump?
Yeah, you have a landing. Well, the difference, like you can jump a tabletop where if you land short, you just land before the landing, and you're going to do fine.
Okay.
But this one triple jump, for example, you have the ramp and the landing are just separate ramps, so you cannot jump short. If you jump short, you're going to be really ugly.
What would you say? Yeah. What would you say is the biggest risk of racing like that? Is it collarbone? Is it breaking your wrist? I mean, it just looks like whoop-de-doos are just like scrambling your entire insides when people ride across those. What's the thing that sucks?
Well, people can get their spine fracture,
that's a problem.
Biggest risk, definitely. And most of the people who are really what I call crazy are the freestylers. The freestylers, they go straight up to the air, is more vertical, and those guys, they do backflips, and if they land wrong, I've seen many of them in wheelchairs, and it is pretty dangerous.
Before the X Games and all that stuff, when you do just regular motocross and all that, the guys that lived next door to me when I grew up in West Virginia, they were all into motocross.
Sure.
So their dad was like the guy who ran all the different circuits, and even if they went and they poured dumpster dirt into, you know, the Astrodome or whatever it was.
He's the guy.
He's the guy that would do all that. So when those, and they were sponsored. They were sponsored by like Honda and Kawasaki and somebody else, and they would get all the new bikes, and the bikes would come in boxes. And then, you know, every new model would come out. You get a brand new bike. I remember all the Hondas at one point in time, they started putting blue seats on them. We're like, oh, this is so cool. This is crazy. But all those old bikes, the kids in the neighborhood were allowed to ride. So we were, damn, you know, like, they're a couple of years old. They're basically demoed.
And but
so
they're
like,
still high performance.
They're still,
right?
Yeah. They're still great bikes. I mean, I would take out like a 125. You know, when we were younger, we started on 50 cc's, but he had this track in the back. And these pro racers would come into town because we had a track by our house, and that was like their home track and all that stuff. But they would get out there, man, and they had some stuff that they built with like little bobcats.
Yeah.
Where they moved dirt. They had ramps. People were doing flips on bikes, stuff you'd never seen before. But these pros would come in. And I mean, like, pros, like, California pros.
Right.
You know, with their girlfriends in tow, spend the weekend, and they go do High Point Raceway. But I got to watch it all the time. You just, a bunch of friends would just sit out there when these guys came into town and watch them do tricks in Davy Coombs' backyard.
That had to be cool.
It was cool, man.
Yeah.
And now he's got...
And how old were you?
Oh, from the ages of 5 till 18.
Oh, man.
Because he then
about around 12, you were excited to see the girlfriends.
Oh, my God, dude. You have no idea.
Oh, I've been to Supercross.
His brother, Timmy Coombs, won this race called Blackwater. His dad was in charge of the whole thing. They're all good-looking guys. They all party. I mean, you have no idea how hard these guys throw down in general. And Davey now is he's the guy who does Racer X magazine. So he's still kind of in the business. But
we all have subscription.
Yeah,
I think we got
someone. Guitar World magazine. Oh, yes. Steve, do we have Warren Williamson there?
Hello, Warren. Welcome to the men's room.
How are you guys?
We're doing great, Warren.
You.
How are you, man?
You know what? I'm really good. I'm actually riding today. I'm actually down in Southern Oregon. Got the bike out, going to meet some of our road captains who are coming out from the East Coast. So I stopped just for you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Nice. We appreciate that. Let me just ask you about the weather in Southern Oregon.
You know, it's actually beautiful today. It's great riding weather. It's probably mid-70s, a few clouds. Happy to do the weather for you guys.
No nice. Offense, Warren. Nice. I did not want to hear that. It is cold and rainy here.
Warren, the reason that we're calling you and bothering you on this day on your ride is because we got an email from Ray Humphreys, who is going to accompany you on your Memorial Torch run, and he asked us for a favor, and we wanted to talk to you and find out exactly what's going on. We know you're the president of Tribute to Fallen Soldiers, and you're getting your ride organized. Tell a little about what exactly you guys have planned.
So this is our 11th year of doing this mission. Every summer, we go cross-country from Oregon to Washington, D.C., to Arlington National Cemetery to honor America's fallen service members. Now, these are all post-9/11, so all Afghanistan, Iraq. And we change the route every single year so we can meet families, Gold Star families, from every part of the country. And it's something that we're extremely proud to be able to do. We love doing this, and this year we've scheduled 67 visits with Gold Star families in 15 different states.
Wow. See, our press release said 59, and that we just got from Ray, and I thought that was going to be a lot. Is that at the end of the day? Is that something that you do just along the way, that you stop off and meet with the families?
So every day our morning begins at 8:30, it doesn't depend on which time zone we're in. We always start at 8:30 in the morning. And we will typically do 3 to 4 fallen soldier visits per day.
Wow.
And but that changes. It depends on where we are. In fact, in North Ogden, Utah this year, we're doing 6 in one afternoon, and then 1 at dinner that night and 1 earlier that day. So 8 in that day when we get into Utah. So it just depends on where we are.
Okay.
And we spend an hour with each family. And the whole priority for us is to let them know that we still love them, we still care, and we haven't forgotten.
When you're doing a 22-day ride, I would assume that physically that's a challenging thing. How mentally challenging is it as well to go and visit these families and, you know, and talk to them? And I know it's a very positive experience, but there's got to be a lot of pain involved too as well, I would think.
You know, it's a great experience. It really is. But you're right. Every family has their own dynamic, their own story, their own grief. In fact, a few of the families we're honoring this year They lost their soldiers just last year in 2019. Some go back as far as 2003. The grief is something you don't get used to because every family has a different story. What is awesome about this is when you pull into a neighborhood and you see that family standing out on the front lawn waiting for you, you already see that they have tears in their eyes when we pull up. Because one of the things that we always hear is they think that people have forgotten. And then when 100 burly bikers show up and say, no, we haven't forgotten, it's a pretty cool experience.
In my experience, when 100 bikers roll up to my house and say, we haven't forgotten, I owe somebody money. So this has to be a much more positive thing. How many, you said this is your 11th year doing this?
Correct.
So how many families do you even know that you have talked to in the course of 11 or the first 10 years that you've done this?
So at the end of this year, we will have surpassed 800.
Jeez, okay. Man. That is incredible, man. I mean, that's a really, really cool thing.
And Warren, I, from what I understand, you take the flag to each individual family. You have the family members sign that flag. And then when you get to Arlington Cemetery in August on the 2nd, then you present that flag.
So there's a few things that we do, guys. And I heard your interview yesterday, and thank you so much for giving us the love. That's awesome. When we get to the homes, each family gets a memorial plaque of distinguished service. It has their soldier's picture and their name on it, and a real lovely inscription. They also get a painted portrait of their fallen hero. And then the flag, we travel with one American flag, and every family that we visit has the opportunity to sign that flag. They can sign it. They can sign their soldier's name. They can put a special message on it, whatever they want. And then when we get to Arlington, we display that flag inside of the cemetery when we do our closing ceremony. And I can't think of a better place to actually do that than Arlington.
We're talking to Warren Williamson, who is the president of the Tribute to Fallen Soldiers. The Memorial Torch Run, there is a torch involved, I have to ask. This torch is going across the United States for 22 days. Various stops along the way. The torch never goes out the entire time. I have to know how this is possible formatically. How does the torch...
I can't get a fire in my fireplace.
Right. How does this bad boy stay lit? Is it in the back of a U-Haul? I mean, what's going on?
So we created... This will be our third edition of this creation. It actually is built on a small trailer. A boat company in Eugene built it for us. It's a beautiful piece of equipment. And internally, it has a couple of different 5-gallon tanks of propane. The mechanism was built actually by a company up there in Seattle. And the canister is kind of like the Olympic torch. And it's got an auto light system to it. So once we start it, we can drive 90 miles an hour and it won't go out.
Damn.
You don't want to tell with the cops listening that you're going 90 miles an hour. But are the police aware? I mean, are authorities aware state to state that you guys are coming through? Because I got to think, you know, the average cop, you're sitting on the side of the highway. Here come 100 bikers with a torch, the flag. I mean, do they have any idea what's going on when they see you?
You know, actually, we have law enforcement with us most of the way. Most of the state highway patrols will pick us up border to border. And then when we get into little jurisdictions and little cities, the local police will also pick us up. It is it's a pretty cool thing when these jurisdictions and these law enforcement agencies grab us and take us to the home with their lights and sirens. And
One of the few people that says on the highway it's really cool when you have cop cars casing you. That is not something that's said often. So now, as far as this ride goes, the photographer, Ray, reached out and he was asking if we could get a hold of Mass for the riders, you know, the KISW Mass, which, by the way, very cool, be very suited, I think. And our thought was, well, sure, but one of the things we don't know are how many riders, and I offered to break into our promotions closet and just steal them until the boss sent me an email and said that might be a bad idea.
Yeah, here's the deal on these masks, Warren. They go to the Washington State Nurses Association. We're trying to get back there, so we're going to see if we can figure out a way to get these masks, still have the money go to the charity and supply you guys. So how many masks, roughly, do you think you guys need?
Very cool. So here's the thing. Not everyone can ride the entire 22 days. So we'll leave Oregon with maybe 120, 130 bikes. And those people who leave Oregon may only ride one day or 2 days, and they'll turn around. But the next day in Boise, Idaho, we'll pick up another 50. But our core group, is what Ray is talking about. So if we had 30 to 40, that would definitely fit to our core group, because that core group goes the entire distance from Oregon to Arlington National Cemetery.
Okay.
And we would dig that. We would love doing that for you guys, and we'd love having you guys just help us along the way.
We'd like to do that for you, man. Make no mistake about that.
Okay, so the race kicks off again on July 12th.
It is not a race, Miles.
The torch run, you know what I'm saying. I would go cannonball run. That's just me. I'd see the families first. I was here first.
Right.
They got the painting first. But we're going to get back to you as soon as we can. We've got a couple of ideas of people who might be able to help get this done.
I offer, but no one wants me to steal. So, I don't know what else to do.
So, Warren, we will be back in touch here as soon as we know something more concrete. We just got to make a couple calls and send out a few emails, okay?
Can I just share a couple things with you guys real quick?
Absolutely. Sure.
We have not been able to fundraise this year because of this darn virus thing. So if anyone is out there willing and loves what we do, they can send us fuel cards, gas cards to help us along. The masks are awesome. We will definitely wear those. When we get to D.C., we'll all put them on, and we'll take a photo for you guys on the Lincoln Memorial steps, whatever it takes. But
oh, no, yeah, that would be...
If we give you one really big mask and you wrap it around Lincoln's head, because I think that would make the real statement there.
Warren, is there a website people can go to and donate?
Yep, they are. It's tribute2fallensoldiers.com. Tribute and then T-O, fallensoldiers.com. On the homepage, I think, scroll down a little bit, and there's a donate button, I think, whether it's $1, $5, whatever. And we're just happy you guys are interested in what we do, and we're thankful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, come on, man.
All right.
This is a no-brainer. But you said, some aside from cash, like fuel cards, anything else you can think of that's material?
You know, really, just fuel cards, and all the riders, they bring sunscreen and all that stuff, because it's a long long days, 22 days. But
hey, look, man, we're in Seattle, so sunscreen still isn't a thing.
Donate yet. Your Marriott hotel points.
There you go.
Yeah, where do you guys stay on this ride? I mean, you guys checking into motels, hotels?
No, we're just a small nonprofit. We can't do that. So what we do is we enlist the help of American Legion posts, VFW posts, or Elks Lodges. They put us up for the night. We sleep on the floor, and they feed us dinner. They feed us breakfast each morning. But, you know, it's like camping. And, you know, people think that might be harsh, but it's nothing compared to what these families go through.
True.
What they go through is nothing compared to us sleeping on the floor. So we're happy to do it.
Okay, Warren, just give us a little. We will get back to you ASAP, okay?
You got it.
Hey, thank you so much,
you guys.
All right, Warren, take care
of
yourself,
man.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.